Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to our first show of 2016. Actually, that's not true. Our second show of 2016. I'm losing track of time. I am Eric Fisher. This is PhillyFanatics.com's Blog Talk Radio show, Philly Sports Talk. I have Gordon Glantz with me. I just should mention Gordon's column on Chip Kelly. Interesting take on Chip Kelly's downfall is up at PhillyFanatics.com right now. Gordon, we've talked about Chip Kelly a lot. Let's look at who they want to replace him. And I was going to ask you about Adam Gase, but I guess it doesn't really matter because he was hired by the Dolphins, who also gave him control of personnel, which he was not going to get here. And, in fact, no new coach is going to get that. It's been clear that Howie Roseman is going to be in charge with Tom Donahoe also there. But there have been some interesting names. So let's actually start with the guy who supposedly is going to interview tomorrow, according to reports, and that is Tom Coughlin, the longtime Giants coach who resigned, clearly with a little push out the door, and is now being mentioned for the Eagles, asked permission. He's coming in here Monday. What do you think of Tom Coughlin as the Eagles coach?
Well, I have a visceral reaction to Tom Coughlin. One of the best parts of, you know, hearing that he was gone was that I wouldn't have to look at him anymore. You know, so he was just a guy I just couldn't stand the way he rumps around and stands there with his hands on his hips like he's the world's doing him injustice all the time. And the Giants are the team I can't stand the most. I mean, more than even the Cowboys, believe it or not. For some reason, the Giants, their players, the different players they've had over the years, different coaches they've had over the years, Jim Fossil and all those guys. So the idea of him coaching the Eagles just on that level, that gut level, just I'm like, oh no. He does have two rings. He's also had a lot of mediocrity there. Hasn't had much success lately. They lost, five, six games this year in the last 2 minutes, which with some really poor coaching decisions. And I just don't really need that kind of heartache in my life, games being blown late. And everybody says, well, he's won two Super Bowls. I mean, you can go to the chalkboard right now and write 100 times, no coach has ever won Super Bowls in two different places. So to think he's just going to come here and duplicate it at age 70 after coming off a 6-10 season where he is directly responsible through some poor coaching decisions, game management type decisions with some narrow losses that could have changed that team's fortunes around, I really want no parts of him. That being said, a candidate I would love to have, who I believe the Eagles have talked to, is the offensive coordinator there, Ben McAdoo, even though he falls a little short of my – I have this new rule. You have to be at least 40 years old and no older than 70. And obviously Coughlin is right at 70, and McAdoo's a little younger. He's 38. But I would round up to 40. In his case, I would round up to 40 because I think he's that much of a hot commodity, the kind of coach I like to have in here. And I am just hoping against hope that maybe they had a real good interview with McAdoo, and this is just a consultation type thing with Coughlin, and not really an interview. And just word leaked out that he's coming to town, but the nature of the conversation is not exactly what people are thinking. That's kind of what I'm hoping. Deep in my gut, I don't really think Coughlin's going to be the guy, but we'll see. I mean, maybe there's some other role they're talking to him about. Maybe he would come here. I mean, I don't want him coming here as head coach at all, but maybe he would come here as a short-term head coach, bring McAdoo with and groom him to be the next guy, kind of a line of succession kind of thing. I don't really know what the conversation would be, but I have a feeling the Eagles have a plan A, a plan B, and a plan C, kind of working at once because they don't want to get stuck having a top choice yanked from them and not having a second option. So I think maybe that's one route they're looking at, something with Coughlin and McAdoo and something like that. So I don't think that's the only way they're looking to go, but I think that is something that they always say have a pair and a spare. Maybe that's the spare.
It's interesting you put that up. I was going to ask you about that. I have the same reaction to Coughlin that you did, not the emotional distaste as a former Giants coach, but this is a guy. Yes, he won two Super Bowls, but they haven't had a winning season in 4 years, and he's certainly this awful NFC East this year. They did lose a lot of games, and you're right. There were some really questionable coaching decisions in those games. And, you know, maybe he's not a good game coach anymore. It wasn't one game. It was a bunch of games. And that's my concern there. But I was going to ask you, and you brought it up, so what would you think of the idea of him coming in as a, you know, short-term head coach with the idea he's there for a couple of years? He's a seasoned coach. He does know what he's doing. And, you know, having guys, whether it's McAdoo or whether it's Deuce Staley or, I mean, whoever it is, just the idea of Coughlin coming in, excuse me, as a mentor grooming role for the next coach, do you think that can work, regardless of whether it's Coughlin or not?
Yeah, you know, sometimes in football, as we know, the best laid plans don't seem to last too long. I mean, even when you bring in players, they could end up, you know, tearing up their knee first day of, non-contact drills, and there goes that plan, you know. So, you draft a guy in the first round, and you draft a guy in the fifth round that plays the same position, and the guy you take in the fifth round is better than the guy you took in the first round and ends up being the starter at that position. So, I mean, all kinds of things happen, and same kind of things happen in coaching, same kind of things happen in front offices. You know, the best laid plans kind of fall apart. So, in theory, it could be what they're thinking, but I just want no part to the man at this point. I mean, I know they won a couple Super Bowls, but, you know, we saw the kind of luck they had. I mean, you know, Philadelphia, if they ever win a Super Bowl, if we ever get a Super Bowl here, which is obviously 1, 2, and 3 on my sports bucket list, you know, would a ball ever Velcro to the helmet of Seiyi Zuratutu the way it did to David Tyree at a key moment? I don't think so. You know, if the Eagles ever win a Super Bowl, they're going to have to win 42-10 and just far and away have to have the best team. So, you know, I don't know. I think he had some magic, and the magic has run out. And I think really to go with a 70-year-old guy who had, you know, give him credit for what he's done, but, you know, certainly give him credit for the fact that he had some teams that were kind of really falling by the wayside in those seasons, and they got hot. You know, they were seasons. Some of those seasons, they were talking about him being fired, and then he ended up winning the last six games.
Yeah, one in particular. Yeah.
Yeah, and then go right through and win the Super Bowl. So, you know, give him credit for that. But I just, you know, sometimes your time has come. You know, so if he still wants to be in football, if you're talking to him about a front office role, you know, maybe. But on the field, on the sideline, you know, like I said, 40 to 70, and he's 70. So, even in short, and what does short term really get you? I mean, short term, you know, you want somebody who's going to be here for really digging their heels for at least a 5-year plan. You know, we just had a guy who didn't even make it 3 years through a 5-year plan. So, I don't really want a guy who's going to be here 2-3 years.
Yeah, you know, whether it's Coughlin or not, I was kind of, I don't like that. I think the idea that you'd bring somebody in to groom the next guy, you know, from the player standpoint, you know, they know that guy's going to be gone. You know, why am I, at some point, especially if the season's not going well, why am I listening to this guy when, you know, this next guy is really the guy who's going to be, you know, the guy in my future. Let's switch to another guy who interviewed today, and that is Kansas City Chiefs offensive coordinator Doug Peterson, former Eagles quarterback. What's your reaction to Doug Peterson, Gordon?
Well, I looked at Doug Peterson's resume, and it is an impressive resume. And you talk about a guy who was around for a long time as largely a backup quarterback. Of course, we got to experience him the most he ever got to be a starting quarterback, but as a backup quarterback for a long time. I mean, really a long time. And he played in the World League. I mean, he you could absorb a lot of knowledge doing that. You know, working with different coaches, working with different starters, being in quarterback meetings, and then his coaching resume looks pretty good. He hasn't been a coordinator that long, however, and obviously you look at Kansas City's offense; it runs like a well-oiled machine. However, and this doesn't just extend to him, but anybody, any coordinator. I'm just wary of a coordinator, an offensive coordinator, whose head coach is an offensive coach. You just wonder how much of the offense is his and how much of the offense is Andy Reid's. Just like Sean McDermott in Carolina. Sean McDermott's name hasn't come up at all, but Ron Rivera's a defensive coach, and Sean McDermott is a defensive coordinator under a defensive head coach. So sometimes I would rather look at the guy who's on the opposite end. It's a defensive head coach, and here's the guy who's been the offensive coordinator, who in a way is in effect almost like the associate head coach because he's running his own offense separate from the head coach. So You know, so that makes me a little leery, but his resume is not bad. I just don't know about his personality, if he's a fiery guy, that kind of thing. But, you know, I when I took a deeper look at his resume, it didn't really scare me off.
Let me flip that on you, that what you just mentioned. And could the fact that he's coaching under Andy Reid and the off, you know, running the offense under Andy Reid, could that make him more attractive to Jeff Lurie, Howie Roseman, et cetera?
Yeah, one vibe, I mean, when I listened to that Jeffrey Lurie press conference, I heard a lot of nostalgia toward the Andy Reid era. They talked a lot about the Andy Reid era, and you know, I think they want to get back to some of that, not all of that, because there were some down times and only one Super Bowl. You know, a lot of getting close and not getting there, and it was very frustrating. But, you know, it was, you know, especially, you know, until the last couple of years, it was pretty successful. He was more or less a 500 coach toward the end. But I think there's I don't think it's in the city. I don't think it's on the pulse of the fan as much. But I think it's a lot in the main offices there at the Link. I think they really want to kind of tap back into that. And if they could, Doug Peterson would be obviously the best option for that. So, yeah, I think that has a lot to do with it, with Jeffrey Lurie and Howie Roseman, and not so much Tom Donahoe, because I don't think he was really involved at that time. But, yeah, I think that has that plays a big factor in it.
Yeah, I will say I have a feeling about Doug Peterson and this job. Not based on any inside information, just an inference or something I hear. You know, you're right. Lurie also talked a lot about not just the Andy Reid era, but he talked about, you know, having someone who understands Philadelphia and understands the attitude here and the fans here. And yeah, that could be Doug Peterson. He, you know, he got booed plenty. He understands the.
Yeah,
fans,
who would understand it better than a quarterback who got booed? So,
right. Let me. And by the way, we're going to get to the NFL playoffs in just a couple minutes. I should before I forget point out that next week the Chiefs are playing the Patriots. We do get the Andy Reid Bill Belichick rematch from the Super Bowl. So
we'll
get there in a minute. Let's talk about two other guys who interviewed, internal candidates. Pat Shurmur, Deuce Daly. Gordon, do either one of these guys excite you as a head coach?
You know, it's kind of like trying to put pieces of a puzzle together. Is there a way to work Shurmur into the future here, not as a head coach, but to keep him on as offensive coordinator? That way the Sam Bradford thing kind of falls into place better, because really I don't see a better option than Sam Bradford right now, which is kind of the situation that you know, Chip Kelly kind of left us in. He's not great, but what other direction would you really go? Try to start over with a rookie or some of these scrap heap guys that you see out there? That, you know, you see a guy like Landry Jones last night with the Steelers, and you see the kind of guys who are out there, and it really falls off. I mean, he's not a Tom Brady type guy, but he's in that next tier, and sometimes if you have somebody in that next tier, you know, you got to hold on to him with everything you have. And if Shurmur's presence would help do that, you have to really think about keeping him on board. I mean, I kind of like the way the offense ran that last game. Granted, it was against a Giants defense that was horrid, but you know, they still ran at tempo, but they didn't run like chickens without their heads attached. You know, kind of, they were quick, but they didn't hurry. Kind of what I talked about in my column about Chip Kelly. So,
yep.
You know, I wouldn't mind having Shurmur still be here as head coach. You know, I thought he conducted himself real well. He was a class act in the press conference afterwards. It would all depend on what they do on the defensive side of the ball. You know, a guy like Mike Pettine is out there who would have to go back and be a defensive coordinator. You know, if you bring in a Pettine, his name hasn't surfaced. I guess it will only surface once they hire a head coach. But say you bring in a Pettine, and then you decide, you know, maybe you make Shurmur, I don't know, head coach, and Pettine, you know, defensive coordinator / associate head coach, or you have Shurmur as head coach and Pettine you have Shurmur as offensive coordinator and Pettine as defensive coordinator, and then you maybe go with a more inexperienced guy. I wouldn't go maybe as far as a Deuce Daly, I don't know, but somebody a little more inexperienced as a head coach with two kind of guys who've been head coaches propping them up as coordinators. That could be also something that, you know, would factor in as well. I don't think Shurmur would take a bump down to, like, offensive quarterback's coach or anything like that. I think he would have to at least be – offensive coordinator, if not offensive coordinator, associate head coach at minimum, to stick around. But then again, he doesn't have a whole lot of leverage. I mean, he's had 2 years of being a head coach at Cleveland and not a lot of success as a head coach, and I think he has some roots in the area now. So, although his son's out of high school. So I don't know. I like to see Shurmur stick around, if only because of the – you know, he kind of comes with Sam Bradford attached to his hip, and really that's something else they really have to think seriously about. You know, they bring in somebody else, starting over with another quarterback.
I see that too, but I have to say I do have an issue. If I'm coming in, if you want to get a good head coach here, if I'm coming in here and I think about which teams, you know, any good head coach is going to have a couple different offers or at least interviews. I don't want somebody telling me who my assistant coaches have to be before I even have the job. That's the one issue I find there. Let me go to some other names out there. But the one guy who got fired, and maybe it was a surprise to people, and that's Lovie Smith. Would you have any interest in Lovie Smith?
I'd bring him in, see what he has to say. I know Lovie Smith in his past, his sort of MO is to turn teams around pretty quickly and then kind of have them fade on him pretty quickly as well, kind of like what we saw here with Chip Kelly. So, people deserve a second chance or a third chance and ask them what they've learned from their past experiences. So I'd certainly bring him in. He could be another option as a defensive coordinator. I think what they do on the defensive side of the ball would dictate, you know, again, would Lovie Smith accept if Lovie Smith is a head coach, would he be agreeable to Shurmur? I don't think you have to insist you hire Shurmur. You explain the situation to them. You know, hey, we have Pat Shurmur here. We have Sam Bradford here. Certainly it's your decision. You're the head coach. But, you know, how would you feel about him staying and see what the answer is? That's all. Say there's no right answer, no wrong answer. We're just curious. His name doesn't really thrill me that much. I mean, McAdoo's name is high on my list. Obviously, the highest on my list was Cowher, but his name isn't even mentioned, so I guess that's a dead issue. I like the McAdoo idea. I'm not as down on the Peterson idea as some people are. The whole situation in Cincinnati. I know we're going to talk about the playoffs more in a few minutes, but you know the situation in Cincinnati is going to be interesting now. You know, will Marvin Lewis lose his job? And then if he does, would one of the coordinators be next in line? If not, you have Hugh Jackson, the offensive coordinator, and you have Paul Gunther, the defensive coordinator, who I think is scheduled to come in here. And he's actually a local guy. He went to one of the Council Rocks, and he was a head coach at Ursinus. He's another defensive coach that would obviously open the door to different options on the offensive side of the ball with sort of like a almost a co-coach situation. So it'll be interesting. I think it's kind of really wide open, although I think they probably have a plan A, plan B, and a plan C, like I said, and they just want to see how the chips fall.
Yeah, pun intended, I guess.
Didn't mean it that way, but. Yeah.
Unintended then. It's interesting that McDermott pretty much, you know, talked about how he, you know, hinted they'd love to coach here, but yet the Eagles flew out to, because the Chiefs won, they actually had to fly out to Kansas City, Lurie and Smolinski and Howie Roseman to interview Doug Peterson, and they did. And also I should mention that Peterson, you know, that's a guy who, if you want to keep Shurmur around, he obviously has a prior relationship with Shurmur from the Eagles, who was around here for a while. So, you know, it's all off that Andy Reid tree, sort of. And maybe that would work out. Let's go to the playoffs. I don't want to say there's not too much to say about the Chiefs and Texans other than the Chiefs ended a 22-year streak without a playoff win by beating them 30-0. A little stat I got off NFL.com. I thank Kevin Patrick for this. The Chiefs lost 8 times during that winless streak over 22 years. The quarterbacks, and I have this on PhillyFanatics.com in the preview, but there's no point in reading the preview at this point, but their losses came twice against Peyton Manning, against John Elway, shows you how long ago it was, once against Dan Marino, by the way, once against Jim Kelly, Joe Flacco, Andrew Luck, and Jim Harbaugh. I mean, that's like with the exception of Harbaugh, that's a Hall of Fame list of quarterbacks. Let's just say that Brian Hoyer from the Texans didn't fit into that level. So we do get that interesting Chiefs-Patriots, Andy Reid, Bill Belichick rematch next week. The game everyone's talking about, the AFC playoff game between the Steelers and the Bengals, which featured a little bit of everything, and really one of the all-time epic collapses by the Bengals.
After a great comeback.
Right, comeback from 15-0 deficit. Actually, they knock Roethlisberger out of the game with a shoulder injury. They're now calling it, they believe to be an AC joint, which is not good for a quarterback. And they're up, and they have the ball. They're up 16-15 with the ball. They fumble. Steelers get the ball. Roethlisberger comes back in. It still looks like the Steelers are really going to have a difficult time getting a field goal. And then just an unbelievably stupid, unsportsmanlike, well, first was the hit to the head penalty, which moves the Steelers up 15 yards to the 32-yard line, which puts them in borderline field goal range. And then Adam Pac-Man Jones gets a 15-yard penalty for unsportsmanlike conduct for bumping into a referee during the, you know, while they're taking the injured receiver off the field as he gets into it with Joey Porter a little bit, the Steelers coach. Gordon, this you mentioned this was Marvin Lewis. First of all, you know, is this one of the all-time collapses? And two, you know, could this cost Marvin Lewis's job?
Yeah, I mean, there's been other you know, teams that have blown leads and you know, in the history of you know, NFL playoffs. But you know, obviously we were talking about the Chiefs. They had a gigantic lead on what was it, the Colts?
45-44 they lost that game. Yeah.
But with just playing like stupidity, you know, this one would have to really go down as, you know, it wasn't necessarily things you did football wise, you know, I mean, I guess the helmet hit, but, you know, with Berflecht and Jones, I mean, we're talking about two guys who, Berflecht was an outstanding college player who went undrafted basically because he's had some issues, and, you know, Pac-Man Jones, we kind of know about his history as well. These are two incredibly talented guys who you just have to always wonder how focused they are, you know, and how much is going on upstairs, how much common sense they're using. And I think at such a vital time, you know, and so much more was at stake than the game. I mean, we're talking about a coach's job's on the line. This is a, you know, they're called the Bungles because they've lost so many playoff games. You know, and they were going to finally win one without their starting quarterback, and you know, really just not smart to do. But I, you know, I'll tell you, I really feel like the officials lost control of that game earlier in the game, and that was leading to a lot of the physicality. I mean, you just have to leave that at the door afterwards. I don't have a brawl after the game's over, but like you don't, but yeah, it doesn't excuse stupid, you know, personal foul penalties at all. But I mean, they really, there were some other times during the game where I'm like, these guys are kind of losing control of the game. There was a lot of emotions. I mean, obviously these are division rivals that are playing for the third time. You know, some things happened in those other games as well. There was a hit against Roethlisberger at the knees, correct, when they played earlier in the year? Yeah.
Yep.
So, and there was that helmet-to-helmet hit, and they replayed it. And earlier in the game, it was a Steelers linebacker. I was at a party. The volume was turned down.
Yep.
So I couldn't really hear what the announcers were saying. But, you know, it looked like a helmet-to-helmet hit. I don't think they called a penalty on it. But,
they did not.
Yeah. You know, so, and I think after that, things really amped up a lot, you know, and, you know, I'm not excusing, you know, because the officials lose control. I mean, you still have to keep control of yourself, but I think there are a lot of factors at play there, and I'd like to see what the, you know, there's going to be some aftershocks felt from that storm, and awful weather as well. I mean, really just, you know, yeah, just horrific weather, which probably doesn't help. But
speaking of awful weather, I'm not sure the temperature got above zero. Today's game with the Seahawks surviving against the Vikings, another comeback. They were down. They didn't score in the first three quarters, and then they scored 10 points. Adrian Peterson fumble helped setting up the field goal. Seahawks go up 10-9. Vikings get down to the, you know, easy field goal range, and Blair Walsh was a really good kicker and had scored, you know, had kicked three field goals already in some really awful cold weather today. Misses a 27-yarder, and the Seahawks move on. Right now, the Redskins have regained the lead against the Packers, 18-17. And let's look ahead to next week, Gordon. Just real, we'll do it real quickly. Packers Redskins winner at the Cardinals. Are you and I in agreement that the Cardinals win?
I think so, because the Packers have really kind of, you know, they off to a good start and faded a lot as the season went on. And, you know, the Redskins, you know, we know that story, how they got in. So whoever wins that game, I think they're going against what may be the best team, maybe the best team in the NFC right now. So, you know, I know all the road teams are doing pretty well this weekend, but I can't see anybody beating Arizona in that
Packers
round anyway.
6-0 and 4-8 after that. How about the Seahawks at the Panthers? What do you see there?
Well, that could be a good one. You know, sometimes, how many times have we seen in all sports, you know, a team kind of get a break? You know, they got the break with the missed field goal from a, you know, a former All-Pro kicker. And then, you know, going back to Brady with the tuck rule that game, then they go on to have, you know, who knows if his whole trajectory is the same after that. And, you know, we've seen it in hockey, a team wins a series on a fluke goal and then they end up going deep in the playoffs. You know, baseball, we've seen, you know, a team gets by on a fluke and then all of a sudden they take off from there. So, you know, this could be something that kind of, you know, and you can never count the Seahawks out. I mean, their team has been there before. Obviously, they were in the Super Bowl last year. They've been in the Super Bowl last and the year before they won the Super Bowl. So you can never count them out. And Carolina, you know, they've had a great year. So it's tough to say, but I am going to just go out on a little bit of a limb and say I think the Seahawks will win that game.
I think I'm with you, too, on that. We'll talk. We'll see next week. And obviously, I haven't done my predictions yet.
Yeah, there's no logical reason. There's no logical reason other than, you know, sometimes you get that break. And you know, and there's that team every year that has that great regular season that kind of bombs out in the playoffs. Yep. You always have that team that's 13-3 or whatever, and then they end up losing in that round. I don't know if it's every year, but it's pretty regular. So maybe Carolina will be that team.
All right, let's go to the AFC, the Chiefs at the Patriots. What do you see there?
No, you mentioned the coaching matchup, and I know the Chiefs have done a good job. I don't quite know how they're doing it because Andy Reid, I've seen enough of Andy Reid for a lifetime. I he's an organized guy and he has a system that works, but you know, when it comes down to coaching, you know, obviously the coaching matchup there is kind of not even. So, you know, and it's in New England. So I would have to go with the Patriots.
I agree with you in the coaching matchup. I just think the Patriots might be really short on personnel. They've overachieved this year. I mean, they've been, you know, bringing in guys off the street, some of their positions.
Has Edelman come back yet?
See, that's what I said. We'll have to see who's back and who's not, but.
Yeah,
you know, or who the running back of the week is, or whatever. But we'll see.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to matter. But
no, although it mattered against the Dolphins that last week. But we'll see.
Yeah.
And then the final game now, you got the Steelers at the Broncos. What do you see there?
I would have to go with the Broncos there. Obviously, with you know, Roethlisberger being hurt, doesn't sound like he'd be able to play, and that other guy in there is kind of like you know, he's. He's really barely, and probably not even an NFL caliber quarterback. They would probably be better off with Matt Barkley in there, you know. So
they have Michael Vick, you know, don't they? They have Michael Vick still, right?
They have Michael Vick, but is he hurt? I don't know what the story is. I mean, maybe they can get Vick back out there next week. Then they'd have a shot, I guess. Vick's always good for at one point. I mean, you can never know from week to week what he could do. You know, bad game, good game, whatever. So, but I just don't. Obviously, without Roethlisberger, and he's such a heart and soul of the team. I think him just coming back in, his presence last night had such an effect. Even if he was at 50%, I think it would mean a lot to the team. So, I don't know if him just being in street clothes with a cap on his head is going to be the same thing on the sidelines. So, obviously, I would have to go with Denver there.
Yeah, I think they're with that Denver defense. We didn't get into Peyton Manning, but with that Denver defense, you know, especially Roethlisberger told Mike Tomlin he could go back in, but he couldn't throw a deep ball his arm. And so, even if he does play next week. You know, with Denver's defense, if he can't throw a deep ball, those guys, they're going to be teeing off on him. And especially if D'Angelo Williams can't come back, the running back. The Steelers played that game without their starting running back. Well, if he's not ready, and they got Roethlisberger with an injured shoulder playing or not playing, you can forget about it. That defense will eat them alive. So,
Denver's always really good in Denver as well. So,
yeah.
Another thing. Yeah.
Let me. We're going to go into archive. We've done a lot of NFL talk. We're going to please check out PhillyFanatics.com. Gordon's column's up there. We're going to add a whole bunch of stuff in the next 48 hours, Flyers, Sixers stuff, college basketball, so check it out. We're going to archives now. So, Gordon, let's say the Flyers here. Somehow, some way, Ron Hextall found the perfect match for a team for Vinny LeCavalier, and which also, in order to get him, they wanted LeCavalier to give up his no-trade clause, which he did. And they were able to swing this deal. The Kings had a bunch of injuries. They took Luke Shen as well, whose contract expires after this year, and the Flyers were not going to re-sign him with their young defenseman coming up. Miracle, Gordon, that he was able to do this? And what does this say about Ron Hextall's? We've been having a lot of criticisms of GMs in this town. What does this say about the GM of the Flyers?
Well, he's the GM that inspires the most confidence. I don't think there's any question about that. And as much as it says about him and the job he's doing, it also speaks volumes about Paul Holmgren and the situation that he left them in, that you have to turn around and practically give away a guy like Luke Shen that you gave up, a guy like JVR, James Van Riemsdyk, to get straight up, so... that'll go down. I don't know what kind of year JVR is having this year. I haven't really paid attention, but obviously all this time we've been wondering who could be on the left wing on that top line, with Giroux and Voracek, and I know they haven't played together a lot this year, but they probably would have if they had Van Riemsdyk on the left side. And to think that Luke Shen was the end result of that trade, it speaks volumes about Hextall, but it speaks even more loudly about Holmgren, and I think he gets a free skate, pardon the pun, when we talk about people who've really done a horrible job here. I mean, I like the guy as a player, and he did an okay job as a coach when he was had a chance to coach here for a little while, but once the salary cap became a factor, he really struggled, you have to make deals like this to kind of dig yourself out. Unfortunately, Hextall has drafted well to have guys on the horizon that you can do this, that you can kind of almost give people away now because you do have some people coming, which they never really had before the Flyers. So they've really the Hockey News always puts out rankings of prospects just like baseball publications do, and the Flyers were always ranked like 30th, 31st, and now they're moving way up to I think 11th or something like that in prospects. So, and they're probably one good forward prospect away from being in the top 10 in terms of prospects on the horizon. So, the fact that he's kind of lined things up for the future allows him to kind of, just dump guys that he has to dump to kind of just clear things up. It clears up roster space. It clears up salary cap space. Not that much because they have to eat half the salary, but, it's a shame you don't get equal value back for Luke Shen, but you get a third round pick and the guy they got is similar to Nick Cousins to me in the fact that he's been a good AHL player, had some cups of coffee where he hasn't done that much yet in the NHL, but he's probably a guy who'll get a shot to at least maybe play for the Flyers at some point and see what he can do down the road. So. It's a trade they had to make, and all things being equal, I guess they kind of got back what more than we could have expected.
Yeah, I'm not sure the third round pick for Luke Shen is not a fair return. By the way, especially because he's not with the prospects coming up, he's probably with his contract up is not going to be here next year anyway. We'll debate the Holmgren thing another day. I think you're being too harsh, but we'll do that another day. We just don't have the time today, but. I do want to also compliment LeCavalier and Luke Shen. LeCavalier was in an awful situation here. He came here for LaViolette. One of the big reasons he came here was Peter LaViolette, who got fired 3 games into the season. And, he never caused any problems. I mean, he wasn't happy, and he wasn't happy. But he went to practice every day. He didn't, he didn't hold out. He didn't complain. Sometimes he spoke honestly, and I'm not going to fault him for that. But class act all the way, and when he had a chance to go to a team that could contend for a cup this year, he waived his no trade clause and told the Kings he would retire at the end of this year. They wouldn't have traded for him if his salary wasn't going to come off the books. So Good job by him and by Luke Shen, who, you know, was at times was a healthy scratch for stretches and, you know, obviously not happy, but always worked his way back in the lineup and, you know, gave full effort and didn't complain all that much. So nice to have both those guys here, not as players in LeCavalier's example, but nice to have them around. All right, let's talk one other Flyer thing before we do final thoughts, Gordon, and that is a guy you and I have talked about a lot, sometimes on the air, sometimes off the air, and that's Sean Couturier. He got a jump start when they moved Voracek to his line, and for a while that line was really dominant. And the problem was nobody else was scoring. So when they came back from that three-game California trip in which they lost all three games, and like I said, most of the goals were coming from Voracek, Simmons, and Couturier, they switched the lines and they put Giroux with Simmons and Voracek and Couturier between Raffel and Braden Schenn. And lo and behold, Sean Couturier's line is still doing the scoring. So, Gordon, has this guy turned a corner? I mean, I think he's got 12 points in his last 10 games. Has he turned a corner offensively where, you know, he's able to produce, and even when they take better players off his wings, he's producing. Has he turned the corner?
Well, you know, I've been critical of him. But, yeah, I mean, 12 points in 10 games is not, you know, I certainly want to say, well, one good game means a guy turned around. But when you look at the big picture, I mean, it seems like who's been on his wing has you know, he's still productive, so you have to look at common denominators. Still a little leery, obviously. I mean, I like to see it over a full season. I know everybody's going to have slumps and times where they're just getting bad breaks and things aren't going their way, even if they are creating offense. You know, my problem with him was never, I never disliked him as a player. I just felt like he was being force-fed into a role of being a second center when he's really more of a natural, on a good team, a third center. You know, if he can turn a corner and really be a legit second center, great. You know, I hope that happens. I don't see it yet. I guess this is the most sustained stretch. Well, he had a stretch last year. So we have seen it before, Eric. We have seen stretches where he's, you know, at the end of last year he was on a line, wasn't it, with Braden Schenn as well at the end of last year?
I think so.
Yeah, you know, same kind of thing. We had a similar conversation. And then this year, you know, he had his struggles again. So really, I mean, that is a key thing of going forward for them. You know, you have to have more than one line, and, you know, that and they say build your team up the middle, and you know, the second center is almost as important as the first center, and, you know, all those things are kind of axioms in hockey that, you know, have held true through all the changes in the game, and, you know, so a lot really hinges on that. So I certainly hope so, and for all the times I've criticized them, I'd be thrilled to be wrong. Trust me. So you know, we'll just see what the next 10 games hold, and then we can kind of evaluate it from there.
Yeah, Flyers have scored with since they've been back 4 goals in each of their 3 wins here. They've won 3 in a row, 4 goals in all of them. And you score 4 goals a night in the NHL, you're in good shape. All right, let's go to final thoughts, Gordon. Go ahead, start us off with final thoughts.
Well, I am thrilled that Shane Gospisbehere, I think he's going to be okay, right? Have you heard anything otherwise?
Lower body injury.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. It's a knee injury, but
it doesn't seem like
they're talking long term, correct? Right.
Not long term. And, you know, when I first heard it, I'm like, here we go again. Things could not have gone any more perfectly for a guy that we've really kind of gotten excited about ever since he played here in the Frozen Four. And, you know, it would have been so typical of this town, the way things have gone, and for this franchise that always seems cursed, that would have been another horrific injury, and your mind starts running away with yourself that, you know, will he ever be the same if it's another horrible knee injury? So I am just kind of encouraged to hear that while it may keep him out for another game or two or whatever, that it's not serious. And then one other last final thought. It's Smith's world. We're just living in it.
Well, I'll give away my Sixers. I've had a lot of things really keep me busy, and I haven't had a chance to write as much as I've wanted to lately, but I'm going to get a chance next 48 hours. And with Ish Smith, my line's going to be, you know, he's not the answer, as in Allen Iverson. But, you know, if, at least right now he's a temporary answer for this team, although I would caution people he's not a long-term answer point guard. But it is, at least they're competitive with him playing. They actually have a professional point guard there, so which is
exactly
nice
right.
to see. I'm going to throw two things out there. One, we haven't talked much college basketball, and when we do, it's usually Villanova or St. Joe's at this point, or Temple. But LaSalle, which has been decimated by injuries and by academic issues, breaks a 7-game losing streak by beating Dayton, which is ranked 25th in the country. It was just a shocker with a win. And the same day, Drexel ends their 4-game winning streak, beating Charleston. And if you predicted that Drexel and LaSalle would win both those games, you're probably in good shape picking numbers for the Powerball, which is now going up to $1.3 billion, apparently. By the way, if I win, I will not be on next Sunday's show. Just throw that out there. But I really want to go to the Bengals, and this was just one of the disgraceful performances. Like you said, after a nice comeback, first of all, if the Eagles fans ever did what the Bengals fans did, throwing trash at Ben Roethlisberger as he gets carted off the field with an injury, it wouldn't be a one-week story like this one's going to be. It would be legend for decades. So, once again, the Philadelphia fans treated unfairly when you compare them the way other fans are going to be treated. But really, this was a meltdown. The Bengals, I was with some people this morning, and one of them was a Ravens fan, and he's like, we don't like either team, but he goes, we're really bred to hate the Steelers. He said, by the end of that game, though, I was rooting for the Steelers to win because of the Bengals' behavior. And granted, neither side really acted all that honorably. It was a very chippy game. But the Bengals really stood out. Vontaze Burfict, first of all, like I said, they should have won the game. And there's a reason the Bengals are 0-5 in the playoffs the last 5 years. There's a reason they haven't won a playoff game in 25 years, the longest streak. And if you look on PhillyFanatics.com, we have that list of the longest streak without a playoff win, and the Bengals are number one, 1990. The Chiefs are number three, although there's a note on there now. Of course, the Chiefs ended that streak yesterday. There's a reason for that, and Marvin Lewis has had this team playing pretty well, but very undisciplined. And Adam Jones, first of all, let's go back to Burfict for a second. Why is he hitting the receiver there? It's clear it's incomplete. And then he had like a fit complaining that he hit him in the shoulder, and you watch the replay, and it couldn't have been a clearer example of a hit to the head. I mean, if the league wants to show what a hit to the head is, they can use that play. And yet, you know, he was complaining like he got ripped off on a call. The fans are booing and throwing stuff. And then Pac-Man Jones completely loses control during the stoppage and picks up a 15-yard penalty. You know what? The Bengals deserve to be out of the playoffs. I was hoping they would win because I want to see a team that hasn't won a playoff game in 25 years win one. And at the end of that game, I felt the same way that Ravens fan felt that I was hanging out with today. I was glad they lost. That was just disgraceful. It's a disgrace to sports. It's a disgrace to their franchise. And good for the Bengals. They deserve to be sitting at home after that one. That's it for this week's show. Please check out PhillyFanatics.com. Gordon's column up there on Chip Kelly. I have some stuff up there still up there from mine. We have the longest streak without a playoff win up there, although I'll have to update it. Maybe I'll have to update again after the Redskins win. They were number 11. And we'll have lots of stuff up on the Flyers, Sixers. You got a taste of some of that stuff today in our discussion, College Notebook, and plus columns. So please check out PhillyFanatics.com. Thank you for listening. Gordon Glantz, great job as always. For Gordon, I am Eric Fisher. Have a great week, everybody.